Hello, and welcome to Dead Times, the only horror movie podcast recorded in 1918. I'm your host, Peter, and with me, as always, is the guy who's going to be a star, Tim. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for having me.
And I do think you're going to be a star, even if the judges at the dance contest don't think so.
Well, I will if I can avoid this damn pandemic. You know, it's with these masks people are wearing everywhere. I don't know. I'm not gonna be able to see my pretty face.
And today we are talking about two movies, from two movies from 2022, X and Pearl, a duology of films about the life of Pearl, horror icon.
Yeah, freshly minted and immediate horror icon. Not since Elise has there been such an immediately cemented horror icon.
Wait until you meet Megan.
Oh, there is Tree in between. That is after Insidious, isn't it?
But so had you heard of these movies before I suggested that we do these then?
I had actually been wanting to get around to watching these for a while. You know, like most of A24's output, it remains on my radar for a little while before I get around to actually watching it. I think I saw A24 as a promotional thing for Pearl released the opening credits on their YouTube page. And I think that I watched that when it came out. I think I watched the whole thing. I don't think I knew at that time that it was connected with X. And I found out about that from the comment section there. But so I already knew that sequence, which is a beautiful sequence. It's one of my favorite credit sequences of recent years, I think.
Pearl was my favorite movie of 2022. I genuinely think it's a masterpiece. And I was originally going to say, let's just do Pearl, but then I was like, well, you kind of have to do X with Pearl.
Yeah, and it
But
certainly wouldn't make any sense to do X without talking about Pearl.
yeah. They're what's interesting about it is that and is that they are they each can be watched independently of the other, and you won't be like lost.
I actually think they would work better in the opposite order. I kind of I wonder a little bit if this is an instance like The Purge. Where the second movie was more kind of what was envisioned by the creative team for this premise and these characters and this world, but that you needed a little bit of a lower budget proof of concept first. Because like all the pieces are there in X, all the groundwork for everything that is amazing about Pearl is there, and you can't separate it. But at the same time, like I think that X is an unavoidably less ambitious movie than Pearl. And as much as I did enjoy it, it really did not prepare me for the experience that Pearl is.
I assume you have never seen a Ty West movie before.
I don't know.
He did House of the Devil and The Innkeepers.
I've seen neither of them.
X is a very much Ty West style. It's very understated. It's a very slow boil. It's very conversational. Everything is very naturalistic. Pearl has certain elements of Ty West that are very signature because Pearl is a very slow boil movie too. It's just much more heightened as it's building to
It's a
its
good word. It's a good word for Pearl.
Pearl is nowhere near as naturalistic as X is.
Which is fitting given the point of view that it is told through.
I know a lot of people are very big fans of Ty West. I'm not that much of a fan of his. And I think X might be my favorite of his movies, but or outside of Pearl. But Pearl is very much
Favorite of the regular Ty West movies.
Yeah. Pearl is him doing something completely different than what he normally does, and it's so good.
So this is maybe a Roth situation where he found his calling late because it was actually adjacent to horror films rather than being the standard horror film thing. Because both of these movies have elements of dark comedy, and Pearl really leans into it.
Yeah.
Arguably, I would say even more than like Midsommar. And Midsommar for a long time was like my standard for like integrating comedy into horror, not to diffuse it, but to heighten it, like to make it more absurd and nightmarish. And I think of that as like a relatively new thing in the horror genre. I can't think of a lot of older examples of it. And that was something I really liked about Midsommar. It felt really fresh to me. It felt like the first one from this bunch, because people always say it's like, you know, it's great, but I don't know if I would really count it as a horror movie. It's just sort of an arty sort of speculative drama, you know, or whatever. And I always thought that was ridiculous, that was people who had a very limited definition of horror film. That any, you know, generous definition of horror film, even, you know, in the slightest, would include The Witch and Hereditary and The Babadook and everything else. But that Midsommar did actually look on the line to me between horror and something else, some, you know, newish or, you know, less, maybe not new, but less well-defined kind of movie, which is adjacent to horror, but is not exactly in that pocket. And I think that Pearl exists in an almost similar space in a way.
Yeah.
Content-wise, it absolutely fits under the horror umbrella, but the nature of how it is told is very, very different from how almost everything that you would call a horror movie is told. Like, on it, the closest thing I can think of to something like it that we've covered on the podcast would maybe be, like, Interview with a Vampire. Or something like that. You know, and it has a similar sort of like, you know, epic, you know, operatic sort of feel to it. Mm-hmm. Even though the time frame is actually a lot shorter in this one.
Yeah. X is, which they've said this in interviews, is that with X, Ty West was pulling from 70s horror, particularly the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That was sort of where he was, that's where his influences were, where he was drawing inspiration from, stuff like that. Like, I think Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. This sort of like grindhouse-y but naturalistic snuff film kind of feeling stuff that is very 70s. With Pearl, which it's set in 1919, so it's set in the silent movie era. But what he's actually drawing from is like big budget Hollywood musicals, Technicolor stuff, like Mary Poppins, The Wizard of Oz, like is very explicitly referenced multiple times in that film. Like it is. Once you see that's where Pearl is drawing its influences from, you see it all over the place, and like it is very obvious that like it's a horror movie that is being directly inspired by, or that's trying to be this sort of like Hollywood spectacular, Technicolor spectacular, from the early days of big budget cinema.
Well, and it makes sense, you know, digging into earlier influences as you go back into time, back into this story. You know, it feels like to me, honestly, like X feels like a mid-80s horror film about how gritty and fucked up the 70s were, like with a little bit of perspective on that. Mm-hmm. And then Pearl feels like a late 60s, early 70s movie about how fucked up the silent era was. You know, there were a couple of movies like that at the time. And they were really stylized and really kind of vivid the way that this movie is, or the way that Pearl is.
Yeah. Part of how Pearl came about. Did you realize that Mia Goth, who plays Maxine in X, also played Pearl, the older version of that character in the movie?
I did not realize that. That makes sense, though.
Yeah. She was explicitly cast as both parts. And Pearl came about because of the fact that she and Ty West worked out, were trying to work out what Pearl's backstory was, and they wrote a story, and then once they finished that story, they wrote a screenplay together, and that became Pearl. So while Ty West has sole credit for X, for directing it, writing it, producing it, well, there are a couple of their producers, but he is solely credited with everything. With Pearl, he shares co-writing credit with Mia Goth.
And even if that were not the case, it would be hard not to get the impression that it is as much her movie as his.
Yeah. And then Maxine, I know, is they're once more, I think, co-writing it. And this time she's been bumped up to the fact that she is one of the executive producers of it. Like this whole, like, again, Wikipedia says that it's the X film series. And this whole franchise seems to be very much the product of this collaboration between Mia Goth and Ty West. That is extremely creatively fruitful, in my opinion.
Well, it is a series about trying to make it in show business as a young woman. And so you would want somebody with a little bit of experience about that on the creative end, I think.
Yeah. Which, since we've mentioned her, what is your opinion of Mia Goth?
Well, I mean, what isn't there to say about Mia Goth in these movies? And in particular in the second one. Yeah, like, it's funny. It's I feel like it's sort of inevitable that we might not really give X its total due, just because it's hard not to compare it to Pearl. But you know, trying trying to be fair, it is a fact that X is closer to an ensemble movie. There's there are more parts, and the parts are more spread evenly in terms of screen time, if not weight to the story necessarily. Pearl is more notably like single performance driven than most movies are these days.
Yeah.
You know, and there's of course one particular aspect of that which has gotten lots and lots of chit chat since Pearl came out. That there is an aspect to the ending of this movie which you just do not find in filmmaking very often these days. In large part because it is not something that very many actors or actresses feel like they can pull off. It is. It's hard not to even talking about her performances, that it's going to be hard not to focus on the second movie. Even though she is fantastic in the first movie, as everybody is. Yeah. And you need that. You need those parts of the performance for the whole character to come together. But it is a little hard to focus on it because everything about her performance as Pearl in the second of these movies is attention grabbing.
Yeah, it is one of the genuinely best performances I've ever seen. It's also one of the strangest. It's a very off-kilter performance.
Well, it's equally strange in a way as the script, you know, and it feels like a script and a performance that grew together.
Yeah. Like, I think that, which, like, as I was saying before, like, she co-wrote that script. And I think that if she didn't have as much input on the script as she did, then there wouldn't be this very melding of her performance with the material that is just so off kilter in this like very specific strange way. that makes it so brilliant.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just, it's not something that that works on paper, or that you'll be able to know whether it's going to work just looking at it on paper.
Yeah.
That it has to be realized at some level before you can commit to it all the way, before you know whether it's going to crash and burn. Yeah, it's just it's a very it's a strange performance. It's a strange character, and it is and both of these movies depict that character in a strange way.
Yeah.
So there's a couple levels there, that the character itself is notable in a couple ways. The performance of that character is notable, and also the way that that character is couched by the movies that she appears in is very, very unusual, in a way that feels like an extension of the unusualness of the performance and the character itself, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, as I was saying before, like, Pearl is obviously a very heightened movie. And Mia Goth's performance is very heightened. And I think that one of the, I guess, brilliant things about this franchise is that you see in X that Mia can perform, like, a very subtle role, a very naturalistic role, that the performance as Pearl is absolutely a performance, and that is very much to her credit as an actress.
Right, that it's a choice. That it's not that she's just a hammy performer and doesn't know how to do anything else. I know she can be subtle and is choosing, you know, in this very over, you know, almost like, and I remember dead listening to a Nick Cage try to explain that a lot of his craziness on screen is German expressionism, that he likes the exaggerated sort of pantomime of emotion, you know, and the big facial expressions and the wide eyes and the the bugging at the camera. And you know, that's a huge thing. That's a huge part of film history. You know, it stretches back past the history of film. It's a huge part of acting history, you know, going back millennia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, because there are a lot of, like, you see this on Twitter all the time, is that people will snip parts of Pearl out to, like, be, like, reaction shots or, like, little clips. And it does look like she's giving this sort of, like, over-the-top performance that, which it is an over-the-top performance, but, like, an over-the-top performance in sort of a bad way that is not present when you watch the entire performance as a whole. Like you said, it's a choice. She makes these choices, and they're brilliant choices, and, When we get to the scene where she's at the table with Mitzi, you can see, like, she has enormous talent. And it isn't just sort of like, which I guess I'm going to shit on someone, but it isn't like she's delivering a William Shatner performance.
No.
Yeah.
It is not like that. Yeah, and it's choices, and it's choices made with respect to the movies that she's in here.
Yeah.
You know, that she knows that this is going to, it reminds me of, I remember the first little snippets that I heard when I was a much younger person, like the first a few times that I heard Mark Hamill as the Joker, you know, me being, an older Gen Z kid, growing up, growing up as a kid, seeing the Burton movies, and then as a older kid, younger teenager, seeing the Nolan movies, and that kind of being my Joker, and then going back and looking at some Mark Hamill stuff, and thinking, oh yeah, it's fun, and it's funny and appropriately convincing, but not all that scary. Certainly not just immediately unnerving to listen to, the way that Heath Ledger is. And so I didn't really get the magic of that performance until I actually watched a decent amount of the animated series, which is where that performance originates. It's where that character is developed. And if you watch the animated series, tonally, the animated series is so grounded and so noir-y, and most of the performances, especially by like kids' cartoon standards, are almost deadpan. They're so subtle and so low key, except for the Joker. And so what you get seeing that character and that performance, also a very over the top performance of a very compellingly evil person, that the effect that you get is, okay, this isn't a cartoon character in a cartoon. This is a cartoon character in real life.
Yeah.
And that is a sort of horrifying thing to contemplate, that somebody with the energy, you know, of Daffy Duck, that if you were to actually encounter somebody who behaved like that in something that felt like a grounded reality, that you would start to fear for your physical safety very quickly. And that is eventually the effect that you get with Hamill's Joker, is that Hamill gives the effect of being the sort of unhinged cartoon character who is behaving very inappropriately because he does not exist in a silly cartoon setting. And that is what the performance of Pearl is, especially in the second movie. And it's what the movie is about the fact that she behaves inappropriately and that people are aware of this and that she can see that people are aware of this, but does not understand why. So that fact that no, this is not just what kind of movie this is, and she's just kind of, you know, going for it. That's like the whole substance of the movie.
And I definitely do think that Pearl is going to, well, like we've talked about, it's going to overshadow her work in X, but I think that her work in X is fantastic. But she is much, 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 much more subtle. And I think that she is, like, I don't want to say that the other cast overshines her, but she is more of a part of the cast than, like, Pearl, who is just so standout in her own movie.
Right, yeah, that's what I was saying earlier.
Like, X has a certain degree of flow to the cast performances that no one really steals the scenes in X.
X is just a really slick, really cool slasher movie.
Really just
first and foremost. And so it has that kind of rhythm, and it's done very well. And does sort of slowly circle the drain around the actual central figure, which is the antagonist. But keeps that to the shadows for the most part. You're mostly hanging out with the dumb teenagers. And it makes sense going through that to get to something like Pearl, which is so not that.
Yeah.
In any sense of the word.
But I think that any way of looking at this franchise, you have to appreciate Mia Goth. Like, I think she is the beating heart and soul of these two movies, even as she is like the main character in both of them.
I don't think that anybody would dispute that.
Yeah.
It's more to the point where I think the other lovely qualities of these movies will probably be overshadowed by the celebration of her.
Yeah. And I do think it is genuinely wonderful that she could find sort of this collaboration with Ty West and this franchise to demonstrate her own performance abilities. And I think that this is really, it's very exciting to see an emergent talent with this much capability, like arriving so, I guess, fully formed in these, in this duology of movies and soon to be a trilogy. It's very impressive, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and the fact that it feels so fresh. Yeah. You know, one of the reasons why I think it might be regrettable for Pearl to overshadow X is that X feels pretty unique amongst the A24 horror set in a lot of ways. You know, I think already at that point signaled a widening of the parameters of that style, which Pearl obviously leans a lot harder into. Neither of these movies are particularly about grief, at least not in the traditional, you know, grief over the death of a loved one, you know, grief over the loss of youth, maybe. So it doesn't feel like the way that other arrivals on this scene have a little bit. That it doesn't feel like sort of participating in a form that already exists. You know, that as much as I like a lot of those movies, we've talked about them so much over the years, that as much as I enjoy them so much, some of them are among my favorites in the genre. There is unavoidably this sort of sense that that you're looking at filmmakers who don't have a very deep attachment to the horror genre, but who looked over at the A24 thing going on and were like, that I could tell my stories through that. That's a medium that attracts me. You know, and so it's more about that than it is about pushing the horror genre forward necessarily. At some of the time, at least, I think inevitably it feels that way. This stuff, paradoxically, for feeling sort of newer and more like a new development in the genre, feels more rooted in the history of the genre. Again, the first one, in a lot of ways, is a pretty traditional slasher movie, certainly in comparison to something like Hereditary.
Yeah.
It feels very authentic. You know, it feels like it feels like people telling stories within this genre, within this form, because that is where the stories that they want to tell are located. You know, and not because not because there's something appealing about the aesthetic.
So do you have any other initial thoughts on X?
We probably should dive into the movies. Yeah, it's, you know, we can talk about them, you know, as a duology as long as we want, but we should probably save that until after we've covered the details.
Yeah, I literally do not know where to put discussion of Pearl as a character in this podcast, because it's so unique, particularly with the prequel nature of Pearl. But like, I think that it would be fruitful to talk about X first, because with X we have both Maxine and Pearl, and they're obviously played by the same actress, and they're so uniquely, those two characters are so uniquely connected to each other.
Yeah, and that is my hope, because we have set the stage to tell a story now with Maxine that mirrors the story that we have just told with Pearl in some number of ways. And so I'm hopeful that if they pull that off and they really stick the landing, then that will, even more so than Pearl has, will sort of retroactively lend more attention and positivity to X. That if we can do something really, really cool with Maxine's character as much as the second movie did with Pearl's character, And we see X then as sort of the wellspring from both of those things. Even though, again, to me, it really looks already to me like it would play better if you viewed them chronologically. If you had this, epic, old world story of the failure, the failure of fame, the failure of Pearl, and then her setting down this path of darkness. And then the intermediate story of her encounter with Maxine, and this it being the sort of eclipse, ships passing in the night moment. And then presumably from there, we're going to follow Maxine's story to follow how she encounters her own darkness in some form or another. And so in some sense, that will have been passed on to her from Pearl through her experience in the first movie. So the first movie, like, it already feels like a bridge between things, really, rather than as like a starting point from which Pearl proceeds.
Yeah. But X, it's set in 1979, and it is about a film crew who are trying to make a pornographic movie.
A pornographic film.
Yeah.
They would insist upon that, I think.
Yeah. Like, the director, RJ, he's, like, obviously a fresh new kid, who is very insistent on this being, like, an art project.
Whereas... I feel like every piece of media in the past few years set in the 70s has this. Like, we just cannot get enough of the idea that there was a time in which people thought that pornography was going to be serious filmmaking, or a time in which it was, as a matter of fact. And that you would get people like the Nice Guys does this too, doesn't it? I think this is a subplot. That they're trying to. That they're trying to like make a porn film to like get out a message about the corruption of the city or something, or it's something ridiculous like that. But the director is like, yeah, man, we're gonna spread the message. We're doing filmmaking with a message, and it's eroticism, but it's also high art. For some reason, we just think that that's the funniest thing about the 70s now.
Yeah. Well, the person that's producing this pornographic film his name's Wayne Gilroy. He is two decades older than basically every other character. In the porn cast, not every other character in the movie. And one of the things one of the main questions I have is, how full of shit do you believe Wayne Gilroy is?
It's sort of hard to tell. He doesn't really live long enough for you to get a fantastic gauge on that. Because this is the interesting thing about this movie. It's the main thing, I think, that you would have to go on to see that there was more to this than meets the eye, just going from this movie, is that the vibes amongst our protagonists are odd. Because there are moments in this movie, in X, which feel kind of wholesome. There are moments when it sounds like at least some of these people are legitimately and earnestly committed to this as a creative endeavor, as much as anything else, and that the attending kind of loose social values that go along with that are more or less earnestly held for wholesome reasons. Again, at least amongst some of them, it seems that way some of the time. It does not seem that way at other times. I don't think that there really is supposed to be an answer. I think that this is kind of leaning into the ambiguity of it being a period piece.
Yeah.
That there are just... lines that we can identify now between acceptable and sussy behavior that people just were not in the habit of drawing at that point in time, kind of especially at that point in time. So there were I think lots, indeed, as there are now, there were lots of social settings like that, where interactions would happen, which were maybe under the surface pretty fucked up, but that nobody would necessarily comment on it. Nobody would necessarily ruffle any feathers over it. So it's an interesting thing, and it kind of puts you it kind of unmoors you from the beginning of this movie. As is the case in our second movie, that our main character doesn't really have anything solid to lean on, that she is nominally not in this by herself, but she is actually in this by herself, you know, or at the very least is unsure enough on this score that it is an additional anxiety. She doesn't really know if there's something fucked up going on here, and she doesn't really know if the thing that she came here to do is kind of fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wayne basically tells everyone, and everyone buys into this idea that they will become famous stars if they make this film. The degree to which that is actually true seems very skeptical. And it's very difficult for me to believe that Wayne believes this whole, like, his constant talk about how we're going to be famous because of this. There were obviously very famous pornographic films in the 70s. Deep Throat, Debbie Does Dallas. But it feels to me like Wayne realizes that he's going to make a lot of money off this and is just going to string these people along by appealing to their aspirations, because that's what both X and Pearl are largely about, is about the frustration of aspiration.
Yeah, and show business aspiration specifically.
Yeah.
You know, the purest form of which, in a sense, is pornography. Yeah. You know, which makes an appearance in both movies. You know, and I think because he represents that it sort of doesn't matter. You know, the people like Wayne, you know, are going to get as much out of you as they can, whether or not you incidentally become famous through working with them. You know, so it could be true, you know, or rather he could believe it, or he could not, but that it doesn't matter, that he's in the business of getting what he wants out of them, you know, whether they're successful or not.
Yeah. But he is dating Maxine, who is, like, obviously much younger than him. And then there are two other actors, Bobby Lynn Parker and Jackson Hole. And then,
well, I kind of wish we're both in the movie a little more. They're both pretty fun.
Yeah. And then there's obviously RJ, the director, and then RJ's girlfriend, Lorraine, is doing sound. And their script is called The Farmer's Daughters, which is about a guy who goes to stay at a farm and then has sex with all the farmer's daughters.
The script is dreadful, but the performances, or what they got of them, are actually not bad.
Yeah.
By and large.
And so they're going to shoot at this farm that belongs to an elderly couple, Howard and Pearl, and, like, immediately something's wrong with this elderly couple, because Howard keeps threatening to shoot Wayne. And doesn't seem to really, well, like, again, it's made clear later, but that Howard had rented out parts of this farm for this film, even though he doesn't know what kind of film it is. But that, like, he doesn't really remember doing that. And Pearl sort of immediately likes Maxine. which as an important element of this film is that Maxine is always wearing overalls, which is the outfit that Pearl normally wears in Pearl.
Yeah, which gives you an even stronger visual link in addition to it being the same actress in those overalls.
Yeah. Although Maxine's overalls are very, very 70s, whereas Pearl's overalls are very early 20th century. They start filming. Maxine winds up walking over. Well, there's like a lake. This is all set in Texas. And so everyone has sort of like southern accents.
And it has a very sort of sleepy southern gothic kind of feel to it.
Yeah. And there's a lake with alligators in it. And so Maxine sort of explores this farm, winds up making her way to the farmhouse where she goes inside to have lemonade with Pearl. Which they have sort of a strange conversation where Pearl talks about being old and that she's jealous of Maxine for her youth. And tells
her that she doesn't understand, that it's easy for her.
Yeah. And then definitely makes a sexual advance towards her. One of the things that is very interesting about this franchise is that it is sex or violence. Sex and violence are very intertwined in it, but they're never the same.
That is true. That is, and that is interesting.
Yeah. Like, no, sex never becomes violent within it. Like, it's always aside from it. But the impulse is presented as essentially from the same place.
Yeah, well, the chief characteristic of Pearl across both of these movies is that she is desirous.
Yeah.
And that the desires for violence and the desires for sex, that they are not the same desire at root, but that they're going to be acted upon in roughly the same sort of way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, as we eventually see with RJ, when one cannot be satisfied, the other will do.
Yes.
And Pearl, which once again, it's being played by the same actress. Pearl and Maxine are the same actress. But Pearl is drawn to Maxine, who has, from her perspective, is everything that she was, but still has a future ahead of her. And she is desirous of that, and she's resentful of that. It's real stew emotions inside Pearl at all times.
And again, the fact that it's porn is not incidental. Like, it's really key to all the theming here, I think.
Yeah.
And again, that's kind of where the ambiguity that I was talking about comes in, because later on, there's a very important scene about wanting to participate in this.
Mm-hmm.
That Maxine wants to do this. And it's sort of tough to know what to do with that. In most movies, I think that would have a starting premise like this that would be showing people in the 70s, making a porn, that the idea that there could be anything empowering about participating in this, or that the characters might want to do it for any reason, that this would just not be on the table.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. You know, again, Maxine probably is being exploited. There's an age problem in her relationship just to begin with, but that she does want to be there, and she does want to do this, at least in part. And And the fact that we are talking about a version of the desire for success, mm-hmm. Which specifically encompasses and overlaps with that,
mm-hmm.
You know, that I desire to be successful. I desire to be seen as beautiful. I desire to be desired, mm-hmm. and desired, you know, as far as that can go, that's a really big part of this. And that's obviously a big part of it for Pearl as well.
Yeah.
So the fact that Pearl, you know, meets this girl who not only wants the glory and attention that she wanted, but that also that she is willing to acknowledge that among other types of attention, this kind of attention mm-hmm. is what she wants. That is clearly sort of part of the I wanted to say like the connection between the two of them, more so the connection that Pearl perceives and the interest that Pearl immediately takes in Maxine.
Well, as we eventually find out what Maxine's backstory is, and from that we can gather that pornography to Maxine represents freedom, it represents independence, it represents wealth. Because we've made some statements about Wayne being a bit exploitative, but there's no indication that he is not dealing with these people in a fair way. He does do some scummy things throughout the movie, but there's no indication that, like, they're not being paid, or they're not being paid for their work or whatever,
or that they're like desperate, that he's exploiting people, that this is the only thing that they have, and that he's totally just emotionally manipulating them and taking advantage.
Once you get to that last scene of the movie and you find out what Maxine's backstory is, you figure out why viewing pornography as sort of a stepping stone to stardom is a connection that she would make and she would be fine with.
Yeah.
But Pearl sees Maxine's big sex scene with Jackson, and it's just she's sort of creeping around. She's creeping around this pornography troupe, and is very aroused and watching them through the windows, and is very aroused, and she goes back to the farmhouse wanting Howard to have sex with her, but he refuses because of the fact that he has a weak heart and assumes that if they have sex, he's going to have a heart attack and die.
Probably not the most unreasonable assumption with this lady.
Yeah.
You imagine she wouldn't be gentle.
Mm-hmm. Howard's backstory is given to us that he fought in both World War I and World War II, which is going to be really important in Pearl.
Yeah, right. And it is important here to explain why he is a hollow man. Why he's a ghoul who is led around by this demon lady. It's yet another similarity with a house and a clock in its walls. He's Kyle MacLachlan in that movie.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that went away to war and had all of the faith in humanity and hope for decency in the world just scooped out of his head.
Yeah, there's... we don't ever really get a focus on Howard the way that we get a focus on Pearl. But Howard sticks with Pearl despite every red flag that you could possibly have.
It clearly goes beyond red flags. As you know, there are comments over the course of this movie which suggest that things have happened before. That this is maybe a kind of marital aid that Pearl has found herself having to resort to, as Howard's heart has been on the downtick.
This is definitely what this couple does. And like, one of my coworkers who also saw this film said that she really wanted to know what happened after the end of Pearl, how Howard was like okay with the events of Pearl. And that's not something we're ever going to probably get. But the fact is that he is okay with the events of Pearl, and that's why he's okay with everything that's going to be going on in this movie.
Yeah, and then again, that the most that we're given about it is war.
Yeah.
You know, and that's honestly enough for me. You know, it's a real thing that happens.
Yeah. You know,
people see shit there and suddenly lose the ability to care about people.
Yeah. So the night falls and Lorraine, who is the prudish girl, decides that she wants to be part of the film. And of course, Wayne is like, yes, yes, absolutely, 100% yes. And RJ, who is her boyfriend, is very upset about this. Lorraine is actually fascinating because of the fact that she is the character who, under normal circumstances, would be the final girl. She's played by Jenna.
Yeah, I wasn't sure at first whether it was going to be her or Maxine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she's the one that's like the prude who's not interested in this pornographic film until she really is interested. So like it feels like she should be the final girl, but she is definitely not. But Wayne talks RJ into doing it. And then he gets very, after they're done filming the scene, RJ gets very upset. Which it's really funny because of the fact that he has like artistic reasons for why there can only be two farmer's daughters in the film, but like it's really obvious about the fact that he's deeply bothered by Lorraine engaging in the sex act with another person.
Yeah, and that's more or less, I think, the movie calling bullshit on the whole 70s zeitgeist, or at least on 70s masculinity, which was you know all about the free love from one end. Lo and behold, as soon as there's pushback the other way, they immediately crumple. It is a ridiculous, I think it is an unequivocally ridiculous thing for him to break down the way that he does after the shit that he has been saying the whole movie.
Yeah. But RJ decides that he's going to steal the car and leave them there. But as he's leaving, he's stopped by Pearl, who attempts to seduce him. Which he just sort of immediately rebuffs. And then she just stabs him a whole bunch of times until his head literally falls off. And there is a really fun effect where the blood from RJ winds up on the car headlight, so it bathes everything in red.
That is beautiful. That is.
As she continues to stab him, despite the fact that he is very dead at that point.
That's a habit that she's had for a while, it turns out.
Yeah.
She likes to make sure the job is done.
But Lorraine and Wayne notice that RJ is missing, and they go searching for him. Wayne goes searching in the barn. He steps on a nail, which is the most unpleasant scene in the entire movie.
it's kind of out of nowhere. I feel that this is the only comparison I ever make for stuff like this, but it felt a little Italian to me.
Yeah.
You know, just an incidental awful thing to happen to the characters, not orchestrated by the antagonist in any way.
Yeah. But he notices that there are like three holes in the barn floor and decides to look through them for some reason. And so he's looking through them, and then Pearl stabs him through the head with a pitchfork, which it turns out she does that a lot to men.
It's kind of her weapon of choice, which is fitting for a serial killer who grew up on a farm.
Yeah, there is... in Pearl, there is a shot where it specifically is designed to look like there is a pitchfork behind her. Because that is her iconic weapon. It is her version of Chucky, or of Jason's machete. Or Freddy's finger knives. But...
Except that her most iconic murder is with an axe.
It is with an axe.
Jack already took that one. He can't have that one.
Mm-hmm. Which, and in the posters, she is holding the axe as opposed to the pitchfork. Lorraine winds up going to the house with Howard, who tells her that Pearl's missing. And he asks her to get a flashlight from the basement, and then he locks her in the basement. When she turns off the light, she finds the corpse of a man who, like, has very obviously been brutally sexually assaulted. But Howard then goes back to the guest house and asks everyone to help him find Pearl. Jackson agrees to go search the pond, where he finds the car that presumably belonged to the corpse in the basement, although there are probably a lot of cars in that pond.
More than out behind the overlook.
Yeah, which we wanted to find out that Jackson was in Vietnam, which creates a little weird parallel between him and Howard. And makes the scene where he's in the pond pretty interesting. But Howard immediately shoots him dead. Meanwhile, Pearl climbs Maxine, who's been asleep this whole time. Pearl climbs into her bed and starts feeling her. Which causes Pearl to wake up and start screaming. Pearl flees the house, and then Bobby Lynn follows her to the lake, which she tries. Bobby Lynn legitimately is trying to help Pearl because she thinks that Pearl has dementia.
He knows she's not all there in some way.
Yeah, but Pearl reveals that she hates blondes, and she calls Bobby Lynn a whore, and then she pushes her into the lake where an alligator eats her. And then both Pearl and Howard come back to the guest house, where Maxine hides underneath her own bed. And they have a long conversation about the murders. Howard reveals that he's keeping Lorraine in the basement. But Pearl is very focused on Maxine, who she thinks is special.
Howard just seems to want to get it over with. He feels like that this has all gotten out of hand. This is a big mess that they got to clean up now.
Yeah.
Whereas Pearl feels that the business of the night is not over yet.
Yeah. They wind up having sex on the bed, which allows Pearl the ability to crawl out from underneath it and... Maxine. It's the same actress. allows Maxine to crawl out from underneath the bed, and then she gets a gun from the truck, or the van, but the tires are slashed, so she can't actually use that to drive away. So she goes back to the farmhouse. She frees Lorraine, who blames her for everything. And then Lorraine tries to run out. But she gets shot by Howard.
That one is surprising. That one is really sudden.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, Howard kills more people than Pearl in this movie, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. But it's all, like, Pearl's kills are all intimate.
Yeah.
Like, Pearl gets up to her victim and does something to them, whereas Howard is always shooting them from afar. That is the primary difference between the two of them in this film. But they try to move... They tried to move Lorraine into the house so then they can claim that Lorraine was attacking them and that it was all self-defense, which I don't know how that solves the problem of all the other murders that have been taking place on the property. But that's what they're going with. But Howard has a heart attack and dies. Maxine confronts Pearl, and winds up grabbing the keys to their truck. And she attempts to shoot Pearl, but it turns out that her gun isn't loaded. Then Pearl attempts to shoot Maxine, but the recoil from the shotgun blows her backwards and breaks her hip, causing her
to... It's so good. It's because she's so old and tiny.
Yeah.
It's like Mr. Burns trying to show Homer how to bunt and the ball just knocks him off the screen.
Yeah. But Pearl reveals that, like, she's like, I am you. We're the same. But then Maxine runs over her with the
only
truck.
Difference between me and you is one bad day.
Yeah. But Maxine runs over her with the truck and while screaming, I'm a star, which is going to be really important later on. And flees. And then the next day the police arrive and like there are bodies all over this property now. And it is revealed that Maxine is the daughter of a fundamentalist Christian preacher.
Who we've been seeing throughout the movie.
Yeah.
I was thinking that was a real guy. They nailed the aesthetic of that. I was just assuming that was actual footage they had pulled.
Yeah. And the police wonder what could possibly be on the camera that RJ had. And that's, boom, end of X.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's got to be some kind of fucked up horror picture.
Yeah.
It's a really kind of like, intentionally cheesy ending. Like, it felt very Grindhouse.
Yeah.
Like the ending of Slice or something. So, good.
All right. So, what are your thoughts on X as its own independent movie?
One of the things that really leapt out at me about it is that in comparison to other recent movies in this vein, it's very straightforward. And not just in the sense of there being no supernatural, kind of vague higgledy-piggledy that's never fully explained going on, but that it's also never really particularly unclear what is going on at any point.
Yeah.
The premise of the movie, the fact that the people that these kids are staying with are crazy and are going to kill them. This is apparent very, very early on. Mm-hmm. I feel like the movie really does not do anything to try to hide from you that this is what's up. So there's in one sense, I think this is it's not a terribly unpredictable movie, not in the sense that the story is generic. It really isn't. But that it kind of lets you know where it's going at each given point. It's not really about the bewildering sort of total nightmarish experience a lot of these movies are about these days. You know, again, it's sort of it's more fundamentally a thriller, like the Scream movies, or like other postmodern arty slasher movies, which again I think this very much falls into. And the second one doesn't, but it does sort of build off of that in another way. So I really appreciated that right from the get-go. There's a lot of substance to this movie that it is easier to see with the advantage of Pearl. The Pearl kind of highlights the important parts of this story in a way that isn't totally apparent from the movie itself. But that did immediately leap out to me. the kind of starkness of the brutality of this movie, which kind of goes hand in hand with how sort of ultimately simplistic the story is, and the presentation of the story is, that there's a very sort of no frills approach to showing how all of this violence goes down. And again, in comparison to the second movie, it is very unstylized.
I think it is very effective for what it does. I think it is, it's like, I feel like I'm saying a backhanded compliment, but I say it's fine. But like, that's because of the fact that Pearl is coming up. And like, it is fine compared to Pearl. Like, I think,
well, again, I think in some ways the association with Pearl makes it better. I don't know. There's interesting stuff in this movie which you could miss if there wasn't a movie that focused on it that came right after.
Yeah. And I think that, like, assuming that they nail Maxine, which hopefully they will, that I think that then, as you said, X is going to be a much more interesting film, because you will see how it leads to these multiple paths for these two characters. And I think that, like, it presents a lot of very interesting material in a way that I find that is very satisfying. But, like, its main problem is that if you comparing X to Pearl, like, it as much as it benefits from that comparison, it also suffers from that comparison.
Right. Yeah. Again, I did not say that it benefited from the comparison. I said it benefited from the association. The fact that Pearl exists is very good for the movie X. It means that a lot more people will give a shit about the movie X than they would have otherwise. But it does not exactly make this movie look better.
Yeah. And Pearl is like, I think that if you cut off X from the franchise and watch it as its own thing, you would have a good time, a satisfying time, particularly if you enjoy Ty West films. Like, if you were a big fan of The Innkeepers or House of the Devil, as I've already mentioned, you would really love X and think it is a great movie. It's really only when you compare, or when you bring Pearl into the equation, that it suffers.
Yeah, although it is, in fairness to X, Pearl also does benefit from X.
Yeah.
I don't think you can't make Pearl without the endpoint of X in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of those people who like Better Call Saul a lot better than Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah, obviously you need Breaking Bad to make Better Call Saul.
All right. Any other thoughts on X before we move on to Pearl?
I think we should get going.
Oh, God. Pearl. Ugh, I love this movie so much.
It's a very unique movie.
It is very unique. It is set in 1918 in the middle of the Spanish influenza pandemic. World War I is going on. And like these two films were filmed back to back using obviously the same set. It's just been very much redressed between the filming. And it was filmed in New Zealand, and the crew for Pearl and X was the crew of Avatar: The Way of Water.
I did not know that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. They were on a break from producing Avatar, or for the production design for Avatar, during which they did all this stuff for Pearl and X. which it's really funny because of the fact that both Pearl and X have a budget of only $1 million.
Wow, that's even low for an independent movie.
Yeah.
Especially a sensation.
So for the two movies put together, it's a $2 million budget. And Pearl in particular, like, X looks fine, but Pearl in particular is just, like, impeccable.
Well, Pearl has a very deliberate visual style that it's going for.
If you looked at Pearl and were told that it was, like, a $50 million movie, there would be a chance you'd believe it.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Like, particularly when you find out that the people making the, like, $500 million Avatar movie were the ones making it, too.
And that it is never the crew's fault.
Yeah.
The crew is generally solid. It's just the asshole in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's...
I'm saying work for Mia Goth, don't work for James Cameron.
Yeah. But these were filmed back to back, Lord of the Rings style. And would you say these are a modern take on Lord of the Rings?
What?
I think it's just that they realized that they had, like, I actually think it's kind of brilliant because of the fact that they realized that they had more film. That they could get more out of everything that they made by just reusing this one set. And it's a great set. As opposed to, like, just scrapping everything and starting from the beginning.
I was surprised at how much time Pearl spends in that same set.
Yeah.
You know, the scope of Pearl feels so much bigger as a movie.
Yeah.
X only takes place over the course of one afternoon and a night.
Mm-hmm. But Pearl, we find out all about Pearl's backstory, which is that she's the child of German immigrants who have a homestead in Texas, that it's a farm that is going through a rough patch. And her mother is a very severe German woman. And her father is in some sort of paralysis. We never learn exactly what's wrong with him.
Well, I thought that she had made some comments to the effect that it was the flu, that the first round of the flu, that this is just more or less what it did to him.
That
whole aspect of the movie, as you might imagine, hit a little close to home with me, because I have also been mostly at home dreaming about my show business dreams, caring for an older relative since the pandemic happened. This is sort of a movie about what if I really, really went with the darkest thoughts that I've ever had in a moment. As far as horror movies cutting close to home with the horror, this is way up there for me, I would have to say.
Yeah, it's never clear how aware her father is of his surroundings.
It seems kind of clear. I don't know. There are points the way where, that he looks at his daughter, just the absolute terror in his eyes.
I think he's
keeping track of the body count just fine.
Yeah. There are scenes where he's like very clearly aware, and then there are sort of scenes where he's not. There's a lot of implied backstory to this particular family unit.
And we get a couple of monologues from her mom.
Yeah.
Who's an actress who I really, really like. I can never remember her name. She was on the last season of Fargo.
Tandy Wright plays Ruth Pearl's mother.
Okay, I might be thinking of someone else in that case.
But
she's really good.
Pearl is a fully adult woman who is married, as she repeatedly talks about throughout this movie. But her mother treats her like an actual child. Which I don't think that there's a really any way Pearl is going to not turn bad over the course of this film. But her mother exacerbates everything. Like,
see, it's ambiguous, though. You know, that's what you're thinking throughout the whole first part of the movie. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as her mother eventually very angrily points out to her, Pearl does not act like the other adults her age. She is really spacey and weird most of the time and does kind of behave like a child. With the little bits of free time that she manages to win for herself, she mostly kills small animals. So, you know, her mom, who eventually makes the point that, I've been riding you hard and not treating you like an adult because you don't act like a functional adult. You act like a weird child woman who doesn't understand the value of life. it's you don't really know what to do with it. A lot of the time her mother seems like just about the worst person that you could imagine. And you are thinking, you know, geez, anybody would end up like how we know Pearl ends up, trying to muddle your way through something like this. Almost every point that her mother seriously makes kind of stands.
Yeah.
We're at the end of it that she will say, okay, no, this is not about you struggling against the horribleness of my oppression. This is about you being selfish, and about my suffering and your father's suffering being immaterial to you because everything outside yourself is immaterial to you. And so your personal dreams can come at the expense of everything because nothing else is even real from your perspective.
Yeah.
Like a child.
It is, which Pearl outright says to her mother at one point that, she hates her. And it is really obvious that her mother doesn't like her because, like, her mother, like, won't let her wear, like, a nice dress.
Well, her mother is terrified of her. That's what you really like figure out over the course of the movie.
Mm-hmm. At this particular point in time, they have no farmhands on the farm. It's just Pearl and her mother. And despite the fact that her mother makes it clear that she knows that Pearl is killing the animals, still has her in charge of taking care of the animals. But Pearl desperately wants to be a silent film star. And loves to dance. She loves to perform. And she always is performing in front of the animals at the barn. It happens almost immediately, is that one of the funniest things in the movie is that she's talking to the animals in the barn after she does like a little performance, and she goes, "Y'all see me for who I really am," and then just there's a goose in the barn and she just immediately murders it.
Yep, and that's our freeze frame for the title of the movie.
which
is pretty ballsy.
Yeah, which she then feeds the goose to an alligator. Which alligators are going to be symbolically important in this movie.
There's like a favorite that she has a name for, right?
Yeah. I forget what the name is, but there is one that she has a specific name for. But she has to, her mother, and she reads a newspaper, which is all about the war and the flu, and it says very clearly that all movie theaters are to close, which does not happen in this film.
No.
Which really reminds me a lot of stuff that we went through. Like, this is a movie that is actually very, it's more like what life in the pandemic has actually been like than I think anyone else has been able of getting to.
Yeah, weirdly, yeah. Yeah, as I was kind of saying earlier.
Like, where it's all these, like, partial mitigation efforts that no one really adheres to. And it's always present, yet always minimized for some people, and then other people are maximally averse to the flu. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, and that the kind of freedoms that that Pearl has access to, that her mother cannot keep an eye on her all the time. Mm-hmm. And so she can, she can stop off at the movies and buy candy and whatnot, but that she's never really off the leash. She's never really off the hook. She always has to get back as soon as mm-hmm. possible.
Yeah. Which we find out, as I mentioned, that she's already married to Howard when this movie starts, and she straight up says that she married Howard to flee from her home. Although we also wind up finding out that Howard married her to flee from his home, so it's not something that really works out for either of them.
They deserve each other.
They do. Pearl, she wants so desperately to leave that farm. That's her entire motivation throughout this entire movie. And of course, VX, we know she never does. But anyways, her mother doesn't want to talk about the war because she literally says, "I don't want to hear about any more dead Germans tonight," which that's a nicely ironic line considering how many dead Germans are going to wind up in this film.
Well, yeah, and that's her objection. You know, that I think gives you a great insight into that character and just like what that character's world has become. You know, because there's a great scene that this character has. It's her last scene speaking in this movie, where you get the sense in no uncertain terms that they're that at one point there was so much more to this person's world, that this person is aware of so much more than what they deal with in their life day to day. And that it is this really painful conscious choice that they have to make every day to put all of that aside and to focus on reality as it is, mm-hmm. And on the life that she's actually leading. And that her kind of inability to communicate anything meaningful with Pearl is sort of a byproduct of that, that she just has such limits on the way that she engages with anything, and so that's her only feelings about the war is I don't want to hear about that, I don't want to think about it, and that the only like reason for that she articulates is that I don't want to hear about my people being killed. Mm-hmm. You know, of all of the things, of all of the unpleasant things going on during that war that you could talk about.
Yeah. Which she is. Ruth, Pearl's mother, is very committed to this isolated, like. Again, the plague helps physicalize what is metaphorical in that Ruth is committed to isolating herself and then Pearl as well in this like little patch of land. And like everything that she does is like building walls up around this patch that's going to keep them contained inside of it. Whereas all Pearl wants to do is flee. And that is fundamentally what their conflict is about throughout this movie. But Pearl has to go in to town to get her father's medicine, which turns out to just be fucking morphine.
Yep. Yeah, which she takes a swig out of every so often.
When she's in town, she goes to the movie theater, which I feel like this town is actually probably a little bit small to, in the silent era, have a movie theater. But she's in the movie theater, and they're watching a dance number, and she just, like, swigs morphine while watching the movie. It's truly bananas. But after the movie, she meets the projectionist who he doesn't even have a name in this film. Like, she never even asks him his name. But she meets the projectionist, who is young and handsome and muscular and continental.
He's a bohemian, he says.
Yeah.
He's like Dean from the Iron Giant.
Yeah. He's someone who, if you were to take a step back from this particular film, you would see that he's just like kind of a shiftless, low-skill worker who is sort of moving from place to place without much hope of future. But to Pearl, he is a gateway into the movie industry, even as he is like as low level in the movie industry as a projectionist at the local movie theater.
Well, Pearl does not really have a great sense of how difficult it is to make it as a star. Yeah. She sees this fucking church dance thing audition that she's going to do as like her ticket to making it or not.
Yeah. But like the reflected fame and sophistication of the movies through this guy, who like not to shit on anyone who was a projectionist in the 1900s.
Oh, there's so many in our audience.
Yeah. But I don't want to like belittle him and what he does, but like the meaning of him to her is so much greater than it actually is in reality. Like he winds up giving her a frame of the movie that he was screening, which she is just floored by. It's such an interesting dynamic. How to him, Pearl is like a local girl that he can have sex with. It isn't that great. Whereas to her, he represents like all of her desires.
Oh yeah, and again, this is a recurring thing, because at this point the darkness and the desperation within Pearl is not immediately apparent to everybody. Mm-hmm. That everybody sees Pearl as a lot as a lot less than she is. That's how she feels, and she is right about that, but not in the sense that she thinks. That everybody actually underestimates how horrible and dangerous Pearl is, rather than underestimating how special and gifted she is, like she mm-hmm. wants to believe.
But
there is still that difference. There is still the fact that because Pearl, Pearl maybe does not understand how dangerous or how deviant she is, but she does know how desperate she is. She does know that the things that she wants and the meaning that she invests in the people who she thinks can help her get it, that goes way beyond mm-hmm. how anybody feels towards her. Mm-hmm. That she does not encounter anybody who wants things as much as she wants what she wants. And so she encounters nobody who needs as much from her as she needs from the people that she encounters.
Yeah. That is why the projectionist is played by such an attractive actor, is because of the fact that it is conveying the fact that it is both her desire for fame and freedom and the world of Hollywood, as well as her sexual desire, all in one person.
And the projectionist is how the recurring theme of pornography enters into this movie. Long before the 70s golden age of pornography, that he has some French art films that he brought back. Yeah. Where you say, can you believe this? Can you believe that they put this stuff on film? I think one day this is going to be everywhere. People will see it as art.
Yeah. Because once again, these films are about sex and violence and the twin impulses of them. Which she winds up, she doesn't have sex with the projectionist yet. But she winds up bicycling home, which she has a giant pocket on the front of her overalls. But she didn't put the film piece or the film still in it deep enough, so it winds up getting blown by the wind into a cornfield. So she tries searching for a while, and then she winds up discovering a scarecrow Which this is one of the most fascinating bits in the film.
It's hard to not talk about a film that has this scene in it.
Yeah. Because the Scarecrow has a top hat on it, and the top hat will be with her for the rest of the film.
Pearl the hat.
Yeah. She takes the Scarecrow off and starts ballroom dancing with it. And then she sees the projectionist's head, where the Scarecrow's head is, drops it, and screams, "I'm married!" at it. Before kissing the Scarecrow and then engaging in masturbation with it.
Yeah, she fucks the Scarecrow. It's
yeah, she does.
It is unmistakable. And man, the imagery, the fact that it keeps cutting back, that it keeps cutting to over her shoulder, mm-hmm. to how you would if you were shooting a real sex scene. And the girl was riding the guy, and you were going to get a shot of the guy's face, but that it's always just the dead, lifeless Scarecrow face.
Yeah.
It's very deliberate, and it's very unnerving.
Yeah. Pearl is a very sexual being, as we learned in the very first movie.
But does not know what to do with that, because nobody wants to fuck hay. That's not a good time.
It feels like she might get an infection.
If you knew anything about what you wanted to do, you would do anything other than that. Literally, just about any material would be better. Mm-hmm. That's the closest thing to sex and violence being directly intertwined in these movies.
Yeah.
The notion of masturbating with straw.
there's something really fascinating about the fact that she initially, the Scarecrow can't propose to have sex with her, but she initially rejects it by insisting that she's married before immediately going through with it.
In her head, she got seduced by the Scarecrow. She's not violating this inanimate object's virginity. No, yeah. it was the fucking, tempting curvy piece of driftwood that totally led her astray. That's what happened.
But there is this inner need to assert the proper way to do things or proper behaviors of, I can't do anything with the Scarecrow, I'm married. Before she immediately abandons it and goes wild with her desires.
It has to supposedly not be her idea. And again, that this, there are so many themes of sexuality in these movies and themes of desire and of wanting to be desired. And that this is sort of the only way that Pearl can conceive of sexuality, because she doesn't understand her own sexual desires outside of the desire to be desired. And so that is really what she fixates on. And that violence generally comes in as an alternative to that. That it's the if I can't be loved, I may as well be feared thing. That if I cannot be desired. That if I cannot make this person desire me, then they will be the victim of my violence. That if they cannot be the victim of my presence, of the magnetism of my presence.
She winds up going home, and then her mom realizes that 8 cents are missing from the medicine, or the amount of money that she gave Pearl for the medicine. And Pearl tells her mother that she bought candy on her way home. Her mom then makes her go to bed without supper, which again is very, very, very childish.
And you're watching and you're like, that's so awful. But the part of that, is because you sort of lapse into thinking of her as a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it's just, yeah, like, Mia Goth is, like, 28 or 29 when she filmed this movie. So she is, like, a fully adult woman. And again, her character is married. So it is deeply weird that her mother treats her like this. But it also, it makes sense within their relationship.
Well, and that it makes sense for Pearl, too. Again, this is the thing, is that you can never, or past a certain point, you can no longer just write it off as her mother being horrible and bitter and abusive. You know, which she is all of those things. But at the same time, like, yeah, clearly part of the reason why Pearl is at the mercy of her mother, and why there's no other option on the table for her. You know, A, they're poor, and there's obviously financial dependence. But that also that you get the sense more and more throughout the movie that Pearl cannot function just out in the world doing stuff. It sure does seem like from the perspective of her mother even from the perspective of loving her daughter and wanting the best for her, that there was no chance of letting her leave the farm, and no chance of letting her run her own life and make her own decisions. And also no chance of ever being able to explain to her why this is the case, or make her understand. So at some point she just decided, like, yeah, I'm going to let her hate me. And I'm going to be from her perspective, the monster who keeps her from living her life, because somebody has to do that. For the sake of the goddamn world, somebody needs to keep Pearl from leaving this house. And so that's going to be me. And she can hate me as much as she wants for it. And I can be as awful as I need to be for her to get the message that she can't get out from this.
The next day they are visited by Howard's family, which his mother brings them a roast pig, which Ruth flat out refuses, because they don't accept charity. Meanwhile, Pearl's sister-in-law, Mitzi, tells her about that at the local church they're going to be doing auditions for a dancing troupe, which will perform in, like, 6 cities in the state. Which Pearl, it's very similar to Index, how this, like, pornographic film is very, like, they're all convinced that it's going to make them a star, but it's actually, like, an incredibly small thing. It's a very small stakes thing.
It's the same thing here.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's like, Pearl envisions the fact that she's going to be, like, a Broadway superstar now. But it's just a dance troupe that's going to travel from a few cities in the state of Texas. Like, she isn't even doing, like, USO shows. But, like, and the thing that I find really fascinating is the fact that Pearl fucking hates Mitzi. But Mitzi seems to genuinely like Pearl and is genuinely trying to be Pearl's friend and does not seem to notice anything is off with Pearl at all.
Well, she clearly loves her brother. Yeah. You know, and wants to support his brother's wife while he's gone. Or her brother's wife.
Yeah. Because throughout this entire movie, the closest thing Pearl has to a friend besides the fucking alligator is Mitzi. who winds up being where Pearl projects all of her resentments.
She never did like blondes.
Yeah.
It makes me think of that that great ContraPoints point from a couple years back now that I think ironically enough that she quotes Silence of the Lambs to get into this, because what is the nature of Buffalo Bill? What is it that he does? He covets. Mm-hmm. And how do we begin to covet, Clarice? We covet what we see every day. Mm-hmm. And this was a point that Natalie made about the proximity effect of hatred. Difficult to muster up continuous hatred for systems and people that you will never meet and are completely removed from your life. It's very, very easy to develop visceral hatred for the people you are close to, the people in your circle who you perceive as representing everything wrong. That circle isn't supposed to be, and you can invest everything else that you hate into that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Mitzi is younger than Pearl. She's blonde. Based on every interaction or every time she's on screen, Mitzi is much more gregarious and has a lot more. Probably has a lot more friends. Mitzi has a lot more money than Pearl does. So, like I said, even though Mitzi does nothing at all to Pearl throughout this entire movie except support her, she becomes this, like, bastion of resentments in Pearl's mind. But that night, she sneaks out of the house and visits the projectionist, who shows her a pornographic film from France,
Only reason that you would do that. I think you'd be really good in a movie like this.
Yeah. But he winds up telling her that what he likes about it is that you can see people who as they truly are, which is funny because of the fact that he is completely incapable of seeing Pearl as she truly is.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Pearl's response to that is, I don't like reality.
Yeah. Pearl also at one point admits that she wishes that, she says that she can't abandon her family.
Yes, if only they would just die.
Yeah.
And he goes like, what?
Like, this guy, he is missing a lot of red flags in this little romance.
As Mitzi does, too. So one of my favorite moments in the movie, when they're sitting together waiting for the audition, and Pearl's going, it has to be me. And Mitzi goes, I don't think you meant to say that out loud, Pearl.
Yeah. I suppose they did not have the benefit of true crime fiction or true crime stories and like a century's worth of serial killer fiction back then. So they can be a little bit forgiven for not noticing that everything Pearl does is off and not.
Well, the only person who knows that everything that Pearl does is off is the person from the old country.
Yeah.
Right, the person that is not super duper invested in the American white picket fence ideal, which is clearly already taking shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which it is really interesting. And that's another neat thing about this movie as kind of the way that it is related to the slasher genre. And again, the first one, I think, is very well rooted in the slasher genre. And then this is sort of building off of that. This is nominally the backstory to a slasher villain. But Oh, I totally forgot where I was going with that. Well.
The next night, Pearl, or the next night, Ruth finds the program for the movie that Pearl saw, which she hid inside the hat that she's been keeping for the entire, movie. And they have a very loud and brutal fight.
Yeah, this is where it all gets laid on the table.
Yeah. This is where her mother reveals that she probably is also wanting to kill her father. She just hasn't gotten around to it yet. Because she literally holds a knife to her father's throat.
Well, and that's in the service of very angrily making the point to Pearl that Pearl's whole conception of herself as as like Rapunzel being kept in the tower by Gothel, that this is all temporal, that it's all very myopic and rooted in her perspective. Her mother is no more free than she is.
Yeah.
Her mother is not hoarding the happiness of the world so that Pearl doesn't get any. Her mother is miserable.
Yeah.
And would love just as much as Pearl would love to walk right out of this life and go do something else. So she's trying to make this point to Pearl that it's just because you are unhappy, that mm-hmm. does not make the sources of your unhappiness like Satan. Mm-hmm. That this it's not just a story about your unhappiness. That's not the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
And Pearl really fundamentally can't see that. Pearl's pain is not her fault. But she's not really capable of any response to it beyond self-pity. She can't contextualize that pain as anything other than like a deliberate unfairness to her.
Yeah. Well, it's the main point that her mother makes is that it's not about what you want. It's about making the most of what you have. Which is not something that Pearl is capable of. That's just fundamentally, like, as you said, her Pearl's primal nature is to covet. She is a creature of desire. And so there is no point where you can, there's no way you can convey that you need to be at peace with yourself and your life.
Just like a dog chasing cars.
Yeah. There's no way that you can convey that in a way that she will understand. They wind up getting into a physical fight, and Pearl, this is not intentional. This is an act of unintentional violence. Pearl winds up shoving her where the fireplace is, which catches Ruth's dress on fire, which goes up immediately the entire dress.
Yeah.
And then Pearl takes the boiling water that the corn has been in.
Very bright idea.
And throws it on her to put out the fire. Which, meanwhile, her dad's watching all this, and this is a moment where it's, like, very obvious that he's completely aware of everything that's going on. And then she drags what she seems to assume that her mother is dead. And she drags...
I did not think that, because I also did not assume that she was dead. And so I assumed that the reason why she immediately threw her in the cellar was to make sure that she did not crawl away in a couple minutes.
Yeah. But she throws her in the cellar and locks the door. And then she goes to the, she like immediately goes into town to the projectionist where they have hot, 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 steamy sex.
It's actually, it's one of a couple, I've made a few references to other versions of this character. It's one of a couple moments in this movie that does actually remind me of the movie Joker 2019. because there's also that beat in the Joker of after his first kill of the guys on the subway. Suddenly invigorated with sexual energy, he goes and he thinks in his mind has sex with the neighbor girl for the first time, finally.
Yeah. And then it's not clear whether it's while they were having sex or after they were having sex, but she's literally dreaming about herself as a film star. That she is in a silent movie and is dancing.
It's just like Shape of Water.
Yeah. It's
fair. All, the,
it's,
all that Pearl needed was a fish man to give her some real loving.
Yeah, it is fascinating the fact that the violence and the sex are intertwined, but the purpose is the fame.
Yeah, well, it's like, sex as glamour, rather than sex as like a means of exerting power, which is the kind of relationship between sex and violence that we are used to seeing in horror context.
Yeah. I forgot to mention the scene earlier, but there's an earlier scene in the film where she stumbles on an alligator's nest. And she takes one of the alligator eggs and puts it in the barn.
Yeah, I thought that was some crazy setup, that she was going to, like, secretly, like, raise the alligator in the barn and then have it eat her dad or something. Like, I thought that was really going somewhere.
No, but then she, while she's thinking about Howard, she immediately just destroys the egg.
Well, she's holding the egg and she's picturing Howard coming up the road to the house. And that she gets upset and crushes the egg and imagines Howard exploding. She's imagining that she's crushing Howard.
Well, eggs, when they come to women, are deeply symbolic.
Did you know that chocolate is the symbol of love?
Yeah. And so it's really fascinating because of the fact that the egg that she picks is not a chicken egg, which is the usual symbol of fertility and motherhood, and it's an alligator egg. Like, it's an actual monster egg.
I appreciate the we haven't talked about it very much. I appreciate the gators in these movies. We didn't talk about one of my favorite scenes in the first movie, which is Maxine almost getting eaten by the gator. Mm-hmm. Early on, there's this absolutely gorgeous overhead shot, which really lingers, where you can see her swimming back towards the dock, and you see the gator swimming across the water directly towards her, at about exactly the same rate, and Maxine is totally unaware of this. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about this. I watched an amazing documentary about Nile crocodiles. It was the first footage that had ever been shot of them underwater. So it was the first guy to actually take a film crew and just like dive into the Nile and film them. And this is not a thing that people do or had done up to that point. In part because Nile crocodiles are still more or less above humans in the food chain where they live. People just lose limbs to them all the time, washing their shit in the river. And I was thinking about it after watching that and about how the kind of terrifying they are. And I was thinking, you know, we talk on this show so much about horror and about monsters as this extension of the primal fear of predators. We always reach for the cave bear. But I was thinking, you know, there's only... If you're talking about like, beyond the Ice Age, modern human times, more or less. If you're a human being and you are worried about being eaten by an animal, there's only really a couple of things that could be. That's a very short list. And most of that list are other mammals. It's mostly big cats and bears are the things that you're going to be frightened of. And then the other biggie is crocodilians. Mm-hmm. It's crocodiles and alligators. So I feel like those, they have a really particular place in the pantheon of human fear. The people reach for them in horror movies a lot more often, I think, than those other two. There was that fucking stupid movie during the hurricane. What was it, Crawl? That came out a few years ago. The other things that we're afraid of, the things that actually the land things, because it's a different story in the ocean, that the other land things that you're afraid of, that sort of fill the monster role, those are still beasts, and in the same way that we even recognize, dogs as sort of in the same category as us, hey, fur, milk, live young. It's, you do sort of feel that with big cats. You see them licking their babies. It's, crocodiles never come off as adorable. Mm-hmm. That is the serpent. That is the dragon. That is the underworld creature. And I feel like the terror that we have of that, even though it is actually a lot less dangerous being in the vicinity, even of like a big crocodile, that, you probably stand a better chance than being close to a lion or a polar bear. But that there's a really unique kind of fear that they inspire in us, and so I really like these movies leaning into that the way that they do.
Mm-hmm. But again, the egg is obviously symbolizing motherhood, and we eventually find out that she did have a Howard did get her pregnant, and she did have a miscarriage, the egg that is symbolizing her child, because that's what eggs symbolize, she doesn't pick like a nice chicken egg or a duck egg or a goose egg. She picks an alligator egg, and then she just, rather than attempting to raise it, she just immediately kills it. She has the impulse that, I will build a nest out of straw for this in the barn, and I will mother it, and then just basically immediately turns around and decides, no, I'm going to kill it. Which she, throughout the entire movie, part of her motivation for marrying Howard was that she wanted to get out of the farm. And yet she, as desperately as she wants to leave the farm, she wants to leave Howard. Which that's another thing that we know from X that she never does.
Yeah, and that this is clearly part of the equation. Mm-hmm. Pearl, by the time of X, has learned to make the best with what she has. Mm-hmm. And that you get the sense that, that being forced to live with Howard this whole time, that's kind of more or less how she did that.
Yeah, that her child with Howard was the thing that was tying her to him. The movie explicitly says it is a miscarriage. But in her mind, she would literally crush that child to death in order to be free from him.
I hated it. I hated the feeling of this thing growing inside me, feeding off of me. I was so relieved when it died.
Yeah. Some people are just not meant to be mothers.
Yeah, Pearl's one of those people.
But, after having sex with the projectionist, she wakes up and she realizes that she has to, that this big church dance audition is that day. And so she has to get home early in order to practice her dancing. And the projectionist tells her that, or the projectionist tells her that he'll just give her a ride home, which she doesn't want. Which, and like, he winds up driving her with her, his arm around her, and she winds up seeing a doughboy who's home from the war, which of course makes her very, very, very uncomfortable. But she winds up rushing around to do like tiniest little bit of cleaning, mostly moving her father from the place where he's been stuck since he watched his wife get burned alive.
Where she starts talking to her dad a lot more. But after the whole thing with her mom, she starts being really sweet to her dad and just like, you know, I know this isn't your fault and you didn't want any of this and yada, yada, yada.
But yeah, she pushes him into the living room and then she invites the projectionist inside. Which, like, he can immediately tell something is off.
Well, he sees the pig.
That's riding there.
It's a good visual. They really nailed the like the contrast between the skin of the pig and the maggots.
Yeah,
it's like it never zooms in on it, but it is very easy to tell what that is.
Mm-hmm. But like, she's acting really flighty throughout this entire scene. And she introduces them to her father. They go upstairs, and don't they make out, I believe?
I don't think so. I think that he's already kind of trying to squeeze out the door.
Yeah, he hears a noise, and he keeps wanting to go check on it. But she leaves, and then she comes back, and she says, oh, it's just the dog. She had to put the dog in the cellar because it was making a mess. And then she takes him to the barn to meet the other animals. And she says that, well, we don't have any other animals now. They all died because she killed them. And talks about how she likes performing for them and that she gave them each one of them names of someone that's like a silent film legend. And then he asks about the dog, and she's just like, what dog? We don't have a dog.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she does not recover from that well. He's like, dog, the one you were just talking about. And she goes, oh, yeah. Well, I think that he doesn't even let her like try to come up with an explanation, that he's just like, well, I think I'm going to go.
Yeah. And then she starts screaming at him about, why have you turned so cold on me?
Yeah. What did I do wrong? What was it?
Yeah.
You know, this stuff is so spooky. Like how fixated she gets on this. It's more and more throughout the movie because she hears her mother during that big altercation that her mother says, no, you're going to fail. You have no chance of achieving your dreams because you're not normal. You are not okay. And people are going to notice. You can't hide it. And so whatever you try to do, people are going to eventually see who you really are, and they will not want anything to do with you anymore. And that clearly haunts her, that fucks her up, because it's true. And so whenever she experiences that, you know, that's kind of the defining thing about Pearl as a character, at least in this movie, is that more and more it's somebody who is really kind of painfully self-aware about what they are, or at least about what they are seen as, and so becomes just desperate to get out of this in some way, and so seizes upon that whenever she has that interaction, whenever somebody gets the vibe of who it is that they're actually talking to and starts trying to exit the situation, that she's like, what was it? What did I do wrong?
Well, he literally tells her that it's scaring him. And then he also tells her that he genuinely hopes that, like, her dreams of fame work out. Before he winds up leaving. And that's when she attacks him with the pitchfork.
It's a brilliant shot. It's like from her point of view, as she he's walking out to the car and she comes up, and she comes up behind him and goes around back of the car as he's getting into it from the passenger side. So he doesn't see her until she's at the driver's side with the pitchfork. And that's when we finally cut away from her point of view back to the other side of the car. It's so good.
Yeah. And while she's stabbing him with the pitchfork over and over and over again, she's screaming, "I'm not staying on this farm. Nothing is going to keep me here." Because in her mind, he is of a kind with her mother. That his rejection of her is as the same as his mother, her mother attempting to keep her on the farm.
Right. Well, that's what everything is.
Yeah.
That nobody and nothing will give her the approval that she wants, because nobody does approve of what they see.
Yeah.
And so everybody forever for her will be her mother. I'm telling her, no, you're not going to be what you dream. You are not actually good enough. You are not actually loved or lovable. Mm-hmm. You will never be desired the way that you desire others.
Yeah. But he winds up falling out of the car, but she puts him back in the car and then pushes the car into the lake for the alligators to eat. And this is going to be a recurring motif for her, which is that after she's done with this, she literally has blood on her hands. Which is how she goes inside to where her father is. And again, there's this big audition coming up. And she winds up strangling her father with a pillow.
Or with, the pillowcase.
Yeah. There's this amazing shot where, behind them is a bird in a cage that's flapping around.
Symbolism.
It symbolizes both at that moment.
Yep.
It's a lovely example of dual symbolism.
It is better than being eaten by an alligator, which she almost did to him earlier.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In a sense, her dad really lucked out as much as anybody in this movie.
She literally tells him at one point that it would be easier for her if she didn't feel like she was abandoning him. That in her mind, killing him now would be preferable to her leaving, which that line comes when her mother's still alive. So it's not like she's leaving him to starve to death.
Yeah, no.
Which is what she assumes is going to happen, because she literally brings her suitcase to the audition so that she can just go directly from the audition to this touring company, which is not how dance touring companies work.
She just doesn't know what any of this is. She doesn't know what show business actually is or what this thing is. There's only the ideal in her mind. There's only the dividing line between the reality that she hates and the dream where everything will be wonderful and she won't ever feel pain again.
But Mitzi, once again, being a really good friend, has saved her a seat in the audition line. Mitzi is very nervous and wants to chat, but Pearl is just completely inside of her own head at that point.
It's a really tense sequence, them slowly moving up towards the front of the line.
Yeah. But and that's where Pearl kind of insults Mitzi. But Mitzi, again, she just does not take it as bad. But Mitzi gets very, very nervous and asks Pearl to switch places with her. So then Pearl winds up going to the audition. And there's a big X on the floor, which is where she's supposed to start.
Yep.
And then she does her dance. What did you think about this dance?
This is, I imagine, where most of the budget for the film went. Realizing her fantasy life is a little elaborate. Yeah, and it's and she gives it everything.
She does.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's very interesting the way that the scene plays, because the real deep irony of this movie, the real sort of central ironic point about it, is that Pearl does have star quality. Obviously, she's mesmerizing. This is a movie about her that we adore, specifically because her presence is mesmerizing, as is the case with many psychopaths. As has often been noted, they are incredibly magnetic, mesmerizing people. Even though you know that all of the passion on display here is born from just the most unhealthy, unwholesome place, that there is still something compelling about it, that she really is giving it everything. And does kind of look like a girl on fire in the midst of it.
Yeah.
And the rejection does feel arbitrary and unfair when it comes. That when they tell her, yeah, you're just not what we're looking for. We're looking for something younger and blonder. That is, why the fuck did we audition then? What is this? You know, and so you really feel it from her perspective. Because it is bullshit. You know, that's the thing, is that it is unfair. As her mother actually was unfair, that these are real awful things in the world that she's coming up against. And so it's not the fact that that she hates them. It's the fact that she expects too much of them, that drives her to do the things that she does.
She, like, again, Pearl is being played by Mia Goth, who is gorgeous and charismatic, and when she's dancing, Mia Goth takes her performance, which is at like a 200 throughout all of Pearl, and like jacks that thing up to like a 500. Like, and it is clear that, for, like, this local church touring company thing, she would be a perfectly fine addition. Like, she doesn't do anything that is obviously, like, how do I put this, like, obviously flawed in her dancing.
Yeah, but they just have no interest in that.
Yeah.
How well she did is just not particularly a factor that they have to consider.
Yeah, which they tell her that she doesn't have X factor, which X factor isn't actually a term that would be used in the 10s of the 20th century.
It's fine.
It's
movie magic.
It's a term that came in much, much, much later, but it works so perfectly because, like, again, it's like the X on the floor, that it ties back to who Pearl is in X. And also, she like you said, she absolutely does have X Factor.
Yeah, and to what these movies are about broadly. You know, and that again, that it's a bit of careful what you wish for. That X Factor quality is something that Maxine and Pearl both really strive after. The problem isn't really that they don't have it. It's just that it isn't as good of a thing as they think it is.
Yeah.
That ability, you know, the ability to be mesmerizing and desired, is really not everything that it's cracked up to be. You know, or in the case of the audition here, that the purity and the earnestness and the dedication, you know, just being, you know, looking for all the world like she is more naturally suited to doing this, to performing, singing and dancing than any other thing that a person could do. That thing, that quality, is not the ticket to salvation. Just as often it is a target that you paint on your back. Maxine, it is what puts her in Pearl's sights. It's what gets her notice. The fact that she has it in the first place is why she's out there. Pearl desires that quality, the more that she tries to embody that, the more that that she tries to to make her want pure, it's like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, right? No, I'm different. I want it more than anybody, you know, and that she just wants to lean into that as much as possible. That's actually destroying her, you know, even though in a sense she is getting what she wants, not getting, the things that she wants. But that in a sense, she is making herself into the person that she wants to be. Mm-hmm. It's just that, that removed from the context of success, that person, the person with X Factor, is a person who is entirely too large for their life. Mm-hmm. And who will never be comfortable in it and will probably hurt the other people in it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which when she's being rejected, in her mind, the judges are replaced by her father, her mother, the projectionist, and Howard. But the person who does the rejecting is her mother.
And it's her mother as she currently looks, so she's all fucked up and burned.
Yeah, they're all dead. Even Howard, because like a point that is made early in this movie and is very subtly repeated throughout it is that Howard has not communicated with any of them for like months, so no one says Howard's probably dead, but they're all like, oh well, no news is good news, right?
Yeah. And again, and the last thing that we heard was man, I sure do love you, and I sure do want to get back, because goddamn, the shit that I'm seeing over here.
Yeah. But yeah, they have to basically drag her off the stage, and she starts screaming, "I'm a star! I'm a star!" Which again is the thing that Maxine screamed.
Yeah, and I felt like was kind of an overwhelming moment in the movie, because she just, you know, she is so not beautiful in that moment.
Yeah.
There is just, again, just the distance between what Pearl wants to be, what Pearl sees herself as, and how the world sees her, what she comes across as. Is just so apparent there, that anybody who has to scream at the top of their lungs that they are a star is clearly not.
Yeah. Which she winds up going outside and, like, crying, and then she goes home. And then Mitzi comes by to check up on her, and she sees the rotting pig, which has been there for the entire film. And then Mitzi proposes what's basically like a therapeutic role-playing game where where Pearl will then say to her everything she wants to say to Howard.
Which is a very interesting device, given this is a period piece, because another big part of this movie, obviously, is that the fact that it is set when it is, that there is no language to talk about what is going on with Pearl.
Yeah.
You know, all that her mother can say is that there is some kind of darkness within Pearl. Mm-hmm. You know, and that you know, her associations with that are going to be with evil of a kind of metaphysical nature. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's obvious to us Pearl has some kind of really, really serious personality disorder. Bordering on or crossing over into sociopathy. It is possible for somebody now with the experiences that Pearl has to exist in an environment that is supportive of them and which prevents them from harming themselves or others.
Yeah.
But nothing like that exists in the world of this movie. Mm-hmm. And that because of that, that there's a lot of stuff about Pearl, which, you know, sort of seems obvious to you, that you recognize it from other portrayals of people like this. But that part of the reason why, you know, nobody, why everybody is always caught off guard once they start to see Pearl's weirdness, and why they have nothing to say about it, nothing, no kind of reaction that they can default to for it, is because there's nothing about it that they recognize, and there's no language to talk about it. So it's all just sort of unsaid, and so ending the movie this way, coming up with a fitting enough excuse, and having a character who is supportive and relatively enlightened enough as Mitzi to intuit that this would be a good and healthy thing to do, that it does generally help to talk about stuff. Coming up with an excuse to do that, and so getting what we're about to get in this movie, which is not something that you would realistically probably ever get from somebody struggling with the kind of problems that Pearl is struggling with in the time period that she lives in. I think that is a really, really brilliant stroke of storytelling. It enables the thing which really clinches the movie. Just figuring out a way to set that up and make it seem credible. Having there be a scene in this movie set in 1919, where the person who was sick in the head gets to exposit at length about how they feel, like they were in a therapy session. It's really, really smart that they found a way to do that feels natural.
Yeah. Once the scene gets going, it's all one take. And Bea Goth gives an amazing performance. This is the scene where Bea Goth is able to give the most complex view inside who Pearl is as a person. And it is a showcase for her talents.
Yeah, and again, that so much of it is built around fear. And that's what comes across most in the monologue, that giving voice to any of this stuff is, it's not something that she's ever contemplated doing. Cause again, she knows that her mother is right. That whenever people, become acquainted, you know, even passingly with what is really going on internally with Pearl, that they immediately react with revulsion. And so the fact that, that's with like nothing to go on, that's getting just a drop in the bucket. And that Pearl seeing all these reactions, seeing the way that people respond just to getting, you know, the slightest taste of all of this shit that she walks around with every day, not sharing with anybody, that just more and more the terror of what would happen if she did actually open up about this, you know, if who she really is, who she sees herself as, was visible to anybody else, that is just so terrifying to her.
Pearl, she starts off by talking about how she hates Howard for leaving her to go to war, and that she originally felt like she was lucky to have Howard because he came from somewhere, and she was so happy when he took her home to his home and she saw that they were like from a wealthy family, but then he kept taking her, or he took her back to the farm, the one place she doesn't want to be. And she hates the fact that she feels imprisoned there. Because again, he's running away from his family, for reasons we don't get into. But she gets pregnant. She says she gets pregnant. She has a miscarriage. She hated the baby and wanted to die. She admits that she wanted to sleep with other men, and then she winds up admitting to murdering multiple people, at which point Mitzi, when she finally stops, Mitzi's like, I should really go.
It's almost exactly the same line that the projectionist had.
Yeah. And as she's leaving, Pearl then says that she's glad that she won the audition. Which Mitzi's like, I didn't get in. But Pearl keeps insisting that she did because of the fact that, again, Mitzi is younger and blonde. And so she's putting all of that onto her.
Yeah, it's very clear, though, that she did not. That she's and she ends up going along with it, but it's clear that she's lying then. That she's like, okay, I did get it. Yeah. Thank you. I hope you can come out and see us when we do the shows.
Yeah. Like, it's actually not even clear to me that she even did audition, because she was freaking out before the audition.
It's so great, because this is a person who was just admitted to constant insane jealousy of everybody. And also to multiple murder, who then is just like, you know, hey, congratulations on getting the part. You know, you can admit it. I don't mind. You know, and it's just, it made me think that, I feel like such a fucking white boy saying this, but it made me think of Joker. It made me think of that scene. It's one of my favorite scenes in that movie, where he stabs the guy with the scissors, and then lets the midget go, the British guy. That he just sort of forgets that he's there, and he's trying to get out, and he can't reach the lock on the door. He looks over, oh yeah, hey, yeah, I'll let you out. Yeah, you're good. You're all good. You know, you were the only one that was ever nice to me. You know, and that is not the way that this scene ends up going. But just the how casually Pearl slots into the role of judge, jury, and executioner. you know, of just like, no, don't worry. It's okay. I give you permission to have achieved something in life. I'm going to let you live. You know, I'm not going to kill you for that. And she's lying, as it turns out. But yeah, I love that beat. Of just being like, you can tell me, you know, knowing that there would be reasons now why she wouldn't want to tell her.
Yeah. But then Mitzi leaves, and then Pearl chases her down the driveway with an axe and brutally murders her, and then feeds her body to the alligator, which once again, she has blood all over her hands in this scene. But then she gets the roast pig that's, again, been rotting. She puts it in her dining room. She grabs her mother's corpse from the basement and, like, brushes its hair and sits it on one chair, then brings her dad in.
She sets up the whole final scene from Happy Birthday to Me.
Yeah, like, it's a nice dinner scene. And then we cut to, like, the next day, Howard returning to the farm, and he comes in and sees the corpses and the rotting pig, and then he sees Pearl, and Pearl has this demented smile on her face, and then the credits roll, and, like, they roll on Pearl smiling, who does not stop for, like, the entire credits. It is a haunting final scene.
It is an even bolder creative choice than how they shoot the opening credits.
Yeah. Which she even starts crying, but she doesn't stop smiling.
Yeah, and man, it's so, like, it's horrifying. It's disturbing. And also, like both of these movies, it kind of verges on camp simultaneously a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I cannot believe that neither of us have compared these to Whatever Happened to Baby Jane yet, which is clearly a movie that these owe their existence to.
Yeah, X is kind of an update of the, like, bitty horror movies from that era of an old woman who kills. But yeah, that final shot, it's a bold creative choice, and it is fantastic, and Mia Goth is able to pull it off.
Yeah, and again, is able to pull it off, I think, in part because she knows that it's mildly ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, so I think probably, you know, some of that grinning is sincere. I think, you know, she's probably trying not to laugh a little bit, you know, in the shot that they used in the movie. Because he asked, how are you going to get a take of that without that? It's just the nature of the beast. It's the nature of the choice.
Yeah. So that was Pearl. Do you have any other thoughts on Pearl?
Oh, God, so many.
I know. I have so many thoughts about this movie that I could never stop talking about it if I... Like, I feel like I have an entire dissertation in me about this movie.
Well, it's just, I feel like it's a movie about something that we all recognize, but, that there wasn't really a movie about. Yeah. Not about this version of it. You know, we tell a lot, we have... pretty much throughout the entirety of the 20th century, since, you know, show business, since the movie and music industries really took off the way that they have, that we have told stories about the fickleness of stardom, and about the destructiveness of the desire for it and the obsession that it can turn into. We've always told these stories, but this is it's such an intimate and personal version of it. You know, there's no actual glamour in these movies, that she never gets access to it, that it's all purely hypothetical, that she never actually gets to experience the emptiness of it, only the emptiness of the promise of it.
Yeah.
That's not a story that we tell all the time. We tell lots of stories about people being let down by fame, but not really all that many about them being let down by the dream of fame. About the dream really just not coming true and you never getting to find out whether it made you happy or not. And that's such a huge American thing, and because of the culture that we live in, because like stardom is this like deep idea that we enshrine as like the holiest state in our society, the desire to achieve that and the like existential despair and disappointment when the vast majority fail to achieve that, that's a huge part of American life. It's a huge part of the American consciousness, is the frustrated desire to be famous, to be a sex symbol, to be glamorous, to be adored by all. So I feel like you really need a horror movie about that. That you need that story in the American the lexicon, and this just so totally nails it, that part of America, the part that just desperately wants to be loved, and does not understand how the desperation with which they cling to that desire off puts people. Mm-hmm. And only pushes them further away. That Pearl is that. Pearl mm-hmm. is the perfect face to put on that horrible, unhealthy splinter of the American consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I recently watched Babylon, which covers some very similar territory to this, but I don't think it does it near as well. About how the desperation to be famous leads to dark places. The desperation to be famous, which winds up becoming the desperation to continue to be famous in that movie, and the destructive nature of that. But like, this movie is really about how destructive that impulse is. And I think it is just, it's absolutely fascinating, multi-layered. I feel like Pearl's main problem is that it is 1918 and not like 2015, when she would have like the most subscribed YouTube channel ever.
Oh yeah, she'd be fine.
No, she would be like the number one Twitch streamer.
And she might, even more than that, she might be about to get kicked off a committee in Congress and maybe expelled. That is another thing that this movie is, and that really kind of cements it as a period piece, is that it is a movie about being stuck in the wasteland before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Being part of the wider world, stuck in the house in the middle of nowhere that you live in. And that is it, that there is no actual conduit to the world that you can participate in, again, outside of the fucking cinema.
Yeah, the only way she could achieve fame is through someone else gatekeeping her. Whereas she can't self-generate it, which is one of the main differences between then and today. Which is like, if she exists today, as I said, she would have so many outlets that she could gain subscribers. Like, she'd be all over TikTok. She would absolutely be canceled by Twitter for something, but...
And would not understand why, and would make lots and lots of videos and threads trying to determine what exactly was she did wrong.
Yeah. But like, I think it is, Pearl is such a fascinating character. But there's so many just brilliant little details to her, and her impulses are so fantastically sketched in these movies. And I think that Pearl might be the masterpiece of both Ty West and Mia Goth's careers, but I hope they do have long and prolific careers ahead of them. But like the fact that they made this movie for that budget and it worked so well is just astounding.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see Maxine. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a pretty exponential rate of improvement in this trilogy so far. You know, it would be pretty insane if Maxine was as better than Pearl as Pearl is than X. But like, I did not think that Pearl would be as better than X as it is. So there isn't really any particular reason not to think that that will be the case.
Yeah, when you texted me, because we had a discussion about whether to do just X or do X and Pearl. And when you texted me, you were like, I really like X. And I'm like, well, I didn't tell you this, but I was just like, wait until you get to Pearl.
And I knew that Pearl was a bigger deal. Pearl, obviously, it got a lot more acclaim when it came out the next did. And kind of overshadowed that movie again already. And I knew what Pearl was. I knew that it was a movie about the earlier life of this character. And so part of that, yeah, I was texting you saying that I was enjoying the movie and that I wanted to press on and watch Pearl immediately so that we could cover them together rather than doing it in two episodes. And so part of the reason why I was enjoying X is because I knew that Pearl was coming. And so this being my introduction to this world and to this character, I was like, okay, yeah, this is something that I'm really interested to dive into more in the next movie.
According to Mia Goth, who again is co-writing the Maxine, Maxine's script is better than either Pearl or X. I don't want to put any too much pressure on it, but it would be amazing if this was like the rare trilogy that has the best movie as the third one.
Yeah, there have not been a whole lot of those. Planet of the Apes, the newer ones. That might be it.
It is just... it is just a phenomenal movie. Which we did on Twitter, there was a thing where it was like, what character do you gravitate towards? And one of the characters I posted was Pearl from Pearl. Alongside Debbie Salt from Scream 2 and Pamela Voorhees from Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's a character type that I enjoy. And I feel like they would be really good friends if they could ever get together.
They could hang out at those fucking J.K. Rowling brunches. They look like actual satanic gatherings.
So any other thoughts on X, Pearl, the films together, Mia Goth, Ty West?
It really just to reiterate what you were just saying, that I'm really excited to see Maxine and whatever else either of these two do, especially if they continue to work together.
Yeah.
And in particular, Mia Goth, because again, it does sound like from what you've said that this was, Ty West, who's maybe a not entirely ungifted director, but one who maybe lacks vision. Lucking into a creative partner with a really surprising level of vision. So it does kind of look to me like this is more indicative of how fruitful the rest of Mia Goth's career is going to be than Ty West. Knows? You know, maybe as a learning experience for filmmaking, you know, maybe Ty West will come out of this a much stronger filmmaker as well.
Yeah, there are many, many people who love Ty West and think his movies are fantastic, and he is He has
this is half his filmography now, right?
Yeah. I forget how many movies he's done. I feel like it's in the neighborhood of six. Oh, he's done nine. So this is, it's still a significant part of his career, but like he has achieved a lot of success and a lot of people acclaim him. But he does have quite a few awards nominations. But like X is very, very much what he does, which is sort of very understated, very realistic, very dramatic stuff. Whereas Pearl is just it isn't like anything I've ever seen from him before.
Again, it's not really all that much like very many other movies that I've seen before.
Yeah, and I do think that like what you're saying is true is that Pearl is in part from this collaboration he has with Mia Goth. And so I think that this is a very creatively fruitful collaboration that I'm very excited to see where it goes. And I think that it is developing Mia Goth's ability to get her own work written, directed in the theaters is going to be an incredible thing to come out of this if she ever decides to go solo with any of these roles that she's taken on in this franchise. So I am very excited to see where it heads.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine. Did she do any back end work before the Pearl? Did she do any writing, directing?
I don't believe so. She's only ever listed as an actress.
I feel like this could very much be a Greta Gerwig situation where we will be getting Mia Goth's directorial debut a year or two down the line.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, more screenplays if she did indeed have such a big hand in the script for Pearl.
Yeah. Hopefully. All I know is that she turned in, like, just an astounding performance and an astounding movie. And I'm very, very happy for that. She is like, she is iconic now. And I hope that I wish her all the success because I know that she deserves it. Much like Pearl, she deserves all the success.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to having Pearl as part of American popular culture as something to refer to. Mm-hmm. I feel like just throughout the whole rest of the 2020s, we are only going to see more people reach to this movie to explain or analogize their experiences or their thoughts.
I'm a star scene has already been memed pretty heavily. All right, let's move on to our final segment. Best death. Who got the best death in these two movies?
I think Mitzi. I really love Mitzi's death scene, the way that it holds on, the way that you... I'm always a fan of this, of when instead of the antagonist in the horror film, suddenly entering into frame, suddenly cutting to them, that seeing them go from the background to the foreground, I find very very compelling. Just letting the tension of that build. And yeah, they drag it out pretty long, that she makes a pretty good run for it. And you just see Pearl coming up behind her with the axe, just kind of deliberately strafing towards her.
Yeah.
And she, almost gets away, but she slips and breaks her heel and just does not regain her momentum after that. Mm-hmm. And ends up getting hacked to pieces.
Yeah. And somehow, I guess no one other than Howard realizes that she's died there. Pearl does not pay for any of her crimes at all, except for the fact that she stays married to Howard for the rest of her life, and she's stuck on that fucking farm.
Yeah, she got the fuck away with it.
Yeah.
At least until those meddling kids.
Yeah. Her prison is that farm that she never leaves. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. I've been your host, Peter.
I continue to be Tim.
Have a good night.
Stay away from the water.